Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week, I'm joined by Filippo Stefanelli, Chief Marketing Officer at Stashaway. Filippo, welcome to Digital Transformation and Leadership.
Hi, Danny. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. Real pleasure to have you on the show today. So just before we started, Filippo, I thought it'd be great if you could give our listeners a bit more insight of your background and what it is you're doing now.
Yeah, so I am I'm now in Singapore since 3 years ago. In June, it will be 3 years that I moved to this wonderful city. And before that, I was in the creative agency industry in Italy. I had co-founded a creative agency there near Milan. Mm-hmm. And after 13 years in that field, I felt the need to work more in tech, experience the world abroad. So I sold my equity stake in that agency, and then I started with an executive MBA in INSEAD, studying in their campuses across the world. One of the campuses is Singapore. So I came here, I fell in love with the city, and then I established myself here in a fintech, very cool fintech startup. I joined as employee number 20. Okay. Now we are more than 150 in less than three years. So things are going in the right direction.
What do you think has been the reason that Stashaway has grown so quickly?
Because the way in which wealth is managed in this part of the world, and I'm speaking of Southeast Asia in general, is could be improved okay. from an alignment perspective between the one selling the wealth product and the customer buying it, because usually the incentives are not so aligned. So the one selling this kind of products is first thing in his top of his mind is making fees, while probably it should be better to think about the long-term wealth of his customer. Okay. And the moment you do that, you discover that you should use, for example, ETF versus unit trust. I don't want to go into too much technical details, but we are simply bringing this wave of the ETF that was started by in the US by Vanguard in the late 70s and then made the autonomous investing after the global financial crisis. This wave came to Europe then in 2011, 2012, and now this wave is finally in Asia and Southeast Asia. And this is the reason the success is there, because there is a lot of money, there is a lot of wealth, first of all, in this part of the world that is poorly managed and is losing to inflation. And there are better ways and more cost-effective ways to deploy this money. And so that's the main reason, in my opinion.
And why Singapore? You mentioned you were drawn to this lovely place. I have the same feeling. I've been here 11 years. What is it that you like about Singapore?
Singapore is truly a meritocracy. Mm-hmm. And coming from Italy, that was something I was looking for, honestly. Let me be honest on this point. I love my country, but for sure the government could be improved, let's say it this way. Mm-hmm. And with a very efficient business ecosystem, with very clear rules and regulation that allows the company to innovate freely.
Okay.
So that was a very important driver. And then, I mean, I was simply curious to explore the world out of Europe, out of the usual Western world, no? What you are used to see in Europe, in the US. And so Asia for me was a complete discovery. I have to admit there are many characteristics that we share. I mean, an Italian family can share a lot of things with an Asian family, honestly, in terms of attachment to the family and the respect for wise and old member of the family. It's very driven by a family-centered kind of mindset. And so there are similarities, but it's a completely new approach, a completely new world. In a matter of a few months, I changed the industry, continent, job, function. I moved with my wife, back then was pregnant. We moved with our cat across across two continents. So quite a big change, 2018 was for me.
That's a bigger change than most people would have been able to deal with all in one go.
But at some point, you need to burn the ship, no? In the sense that if you always think, okay, I have a plan B, if this goes wrong, I can do. You are never really fully committed. So, I went all into the INSEAD executive MBA path by having no plan B, because I sold my equity in the previous company. So it was like a completely new new ground for me. Mm-hmm. And I guess that pays off, because then when you sit down for interview, when you approach your job search process, when you approach where you want to go, you are very, very, very driven and determined, and this pays off.
It's very different when you have to make it work.
Yes.
Yeah. So Filippo, we're going to get into the topic today on fintech. But before we do, I just wanted to ask you a bit more of an icebreaker question. I wondered if you can share with the listeners what your first AOL screen name was.
So in the 90s, mm-hmm. I was quite a computer geek or nerd, depends which vocabulary you prefer.
Yeah.
And with a bunch of friends, we were quite active in the Italian Linux community. Back then was a hot thing, Linux, mm-hmm. open source movement.
Yeah.
Red Hat was starting to be a company. So it was a big thing. And so it was not a AOL or a MSN or Foursquare, I don't remember, MySpace, whatever is the social network back then. Mm-hmm. It was even earlier than that. It was mm-hmm. BBS, like the first modem, the first internet connection. And I have chosen Ergos, E-R-G-O-S, because from, you know, in Italy, you study a lot of Latin language. Mm-hmm. So you have this cogito ergo sum. So I think that therefore I am. Okay. And I felt myself inspired in a very high moment of poetic inspiration. So I have sort of created this word. And then that stick with me till now. I mean, on Twitter, I guess that's still my username.
Okay.
And that's how the story developed.
It's very powerful. I think it's better than mine. I think mine was something like Goku 437, because I was a big Dragon Ball Z fan.
And like 437 because 436 people were before.
Precisely,
you, right?
Precisely. Yeah. Exactly. I wasn't quick enough to the game. A bit like digital assets, but that's another story. So we're going to talk about
digital assets. That's open a very interesting story.
Yeah.
And we are in the peak of the interest now.
Yes.
No? Because
absolutely.
If you followed a bit the Bitcoin 4-year halving cycle, etc., etc., we are exactly where something needs to be proved soon about mm-hmm. Digital asset. And let's see, till now it seems it is going in the direction we expected a few years ago.
Yeah, well, it was similar, wasn't it? Was it 2017? It was also a big high, but then it dropped a lot, didn't it? So I guess
I started to dabble in this market exactly at the top of the top.
Okay.
So December 2017, January 2018.
Yes.
I learned my lesson after a four-year bear market. But now let's see where we go. But however, what we do in Statue has nothing to do with crypto. This is more a personal interest of mine.
Yes. It's an interesting space. But
let me state the disclaimer very fast.
Yes. There's no investment advice on this show.
Honestly, it is a this is a podcast. This episode is about fintech. Mm. You cannot avoid mentioning crypto.
Yeah.
You cannot avoid mentioning decentralized finance. You cannot avoid mentioning this, because this looks super, super interesting. And even if you follow traditional VC money, that kind of money is flowing since 10 years ago into this project. Recently, we have the Coinbase IPO. So, I mean, the money is finally finding also an exit strategy. But you cannot talk about fintech and without mentioning crypto.
Yes.
It's impossible. And there will be no reason to avoid it.
Mm. And I think, unlike the previous high as well, the major financial institutions are really starting to take it quite seriously, aren't they?
It's a completely different panorama. It's a completely different ecosystem right now. Let's see. I mean, back then, 4 years ago, people were selling a Binance account on a second market. So the account, the username and password. It was the peak of the craziness. You want to buy, you need to pay me for my account. It was, I mean, beyond craziness. Now it's not like that. Now you can do whatever you want from your phone with a credit card, even if you should not use a credit card to buy crypto. Obviously, the fees are outrageous. But now it's different. And so let's see where we go. The apart from the celebrities endorsing Bitcoin, Elon Musk and all the rest, it's a completely different environment, because traditional player from Wall Street came now are here. Probably the most savvy accumulated in the last few years without saying this to anybody. But now they are saying this to everybody. And so every day you go on Twitter, every day you open a podcast, somebody's speaking about this topic. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's see where the mania will end.
It's going to be an interesting ride. If it will end, yes.
I think 2021 will be epic.
Yes. Okay.
In the sense, all goes to zero and it's a big crash, and it can always happen. People should be very aware of the risk exposed to these kind of things, because there is no regulation. It can always go to zero. I don't know. There is a better protocol. It can always happen, these kind of things. So, and this is the reason why the opportunity is there, no? Because it is discounting a big risk. Or it goes, I don't know. I don't want to give any price on a podcast, a public podcast, but price prediction. But it could be significant.
Yes.
It has already been significant.
I was going to say, I mean, the price is already a lot higher even now, isn't it, than many people thought it could possibly go, I guess, just after the dip in 2018.
Or the dip during March 24 margin calls, COVID, March 2020.
Yes.
Do you remember that day? It was not a nice day for anybody in the wealth management industry, crypto or traditional.
Yeah,
and Bitcoin there was, I don't know, 4,000 USD, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's already more than 10x from there.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you are on the bubble side of things, you will say, okay, this is even more a proof of tulip mania. Mm-hmm, this is even more bubble calling all Ponzi scheme of the world like a black hole. Instead, if you believe this is the future of store of value, kind of digital store of value, like gold was for centuries has been, so this is simply the beginning. But again, let's see. Yeah. I think, as we also said in some of the our research paper, it is difficult to think that you should not have 1-3% of your wealth into this. It should be difficult to stay that it should be zero. Honestly, why zero? Why cannot be a very small amount that if it goes to zero, you will not suffer a lot? And if it goes to maybe to where it should go, where it could go, you will feel it.
Yes.
So this is where I stand personally.
Yeah, it should be a very small amount, though. And it's something that you'd be prepared to lose, I guess. Nothing that you can't afford to lose.
Obviously, this is absolutely not financial advice, but you can read and document yourself in order to not feel it as a bet. But after you have done the rabbit hole, if you still believe there is a scope for this, probably it should be a very small amount that you can afford absolutely to lose.
Yeah.
But again, not financial advice.
No.
You need to evaluate with the proper financial advice.
Yes, absolutely. So Filippo, we're going to talk about fintech, as we've already started to touch on here. And the first point we're going to unpack is around trust as a growth strategy in fintech. So I'd love you to talk me and the listeners through this point.
Yeah, sure. So fintech is a very broad category. You go from payment card to lending to credit card to payments to digital wallet, and then you arrive to where we stand with Stashway, so digital wealth management. And so I will mostly speak about digital wealth management, and trust me, the kind of needs and the kind of marketing activities, the kind of growth strategy, the kind of customer support you enable when you speak with somebody that is trusting you for the next 20 years to build a retirement nest egg, to send their children to school, to set up to stash away a fund for their wedding or their holiday trip, whatever, is very, very different from somebody that wants to transact with a cheaper card or wants to pay tomorrow or wants to have a loan. So it's a completely different mindset. I know well the mindset of the digital wealth management world, so I will speak about that.
Okay.
So when you speak about trust in the digital wealth management world, you need to understand that money is one of the most intimate and delicate topics ever that you can speak with anybody about. You can speak with anybody about almost everything. When you touch the salary, when you touch the kind of saving investment style, that topic is very, very delicate. So It is like that because money provokes very primal reaction, very primal emotion. Obviously, there is the greediness when the market goes up. Yeah. And obviously, there is the fear of losing everything when the market goes down. So you need to counterbalance those two completely opposite. They are at the end of the spectrum. They are completely opposite, and you need to balance them. Mm-hmm. And usually, people do exactly the opposite of what they should do. No, so they tend to buy when the market is in fully mania mode, super expensive, and mm-hmm. they tend to sell when they should buy. So when the market is cheap. We try to cut through the noise. We try to explain to them that there is makes absolutely no sense to time the market. This has been proved time and time again by many statistical models. There are only a few bunch of super top-notch investors. So if you're not Ray Dalio, Warren Buffett, Jim Simons, and all these kind of names, probably you should invest in a passive ETF diversified mix of funds and do dollar cost averaging. So investing every week, every month, and forget. So where it comes... When it comes to trust, trust is enabling you to believe that what I just told you, dollar cost averaging, set and forget, investing should be boring. A very famous investor say that investing should be as exciting as watching paint in a wall dry. So absolutely should not be something emotional. So you need to trust us from an emotional and conscious perspective and from a logical perspective, because I'm going to prove you with numbers, with projection, that this is the right attitude, the right behavior you should adopt with your hard-earned money. Mm-hmm. But we need to establish the trust bench, the trust base, the kind of benchmark that you are able to trust somebody that hasn't a big skyscraper overlooking downtown, the Marina Bay in Singapore or in the mm-hmm. city of London or in the New York financial district. We are not like them, okay. But we are here to guarantee that we are aligned with your interest. In fact, this is done by charging a very low fee. This is done by absolutely not imposing you any barrier to entry or to exit. So you can withdraw whenever you want, no exit condition, no exit fees. So there are many things we do to create an environment of trust. For example, you call us and we answer the phone in 10 seconds, mm-hmm. Monday to Sunday. There is a real human. And most of the time that real human is able to solve your issue in the first call, in a matter of minutes. This is kind of trust-enabling activity you can do from a growth perspective, marketing perspective, even if it is purely CX, customer experience.
Okay.
Another way to build trust is to be from an advertising perspective where the big banks are. For example, if they do the advertisement on the train station, probably we should be there like them. Mm. If they do the advertisement on a traditional newspaper, probably we should be there. Not only on Google and Facebook and Instagram. So these are all techniques to enable trust. But trust, at the end of the day, in such a delicate topic, is very, very driven by unconscious feeling. And those are difficult. So we try to educate, to enable trust through education. And with our premium IG Network demographic, we also offer some wealth advisor for them so on a one-on-one basis. But overall, it's an holistic process, approach. Okay. An holistic approach that requires time and a lot of effort. For example, every week, we go out with a video market commentary in which we want to put our face. We have built a video production studio inside our headquarter, in which our co-founders have recorded multiple videos, putting their face on the video. And this is something we do in exactly to enable trust. Look at us. We are fully committed. We are fully invested into this. So also using video is a tip that I can give you.
Okay.
A lot of video, putting the face, being consistent.
Is this across social that you push this out?
Then the video is wonderful because the video mm-hmm. can be repurposed in a small episode, sound bite for our podcast. Then they can go in, you can do the transcription and publish a long form content. Then it goes the full version on YouTube. Then it gets into the app, in-app notification system. Mm-hmm. The video is wonderful because you do it once and you can repurpose it 10 times.
Filippo, I see a lot of companies though that don't really employ these tactics. So they don't do video production. They don't have a podcast. They don't invest in kind of content marketing in a meaningful way because it's much more difficult to kind of attribute and measure. Any thoughts around that?
Attribution is a complex topic. It's one of those things that you need to get it 80% okay in order to have a directional point of view on the attribution. You will never be able, or at least it is too expensive. It makes no sense to be 100% sure about the attribution, especially in a product like what we sell. We sell something that requires a lot of consideration. So maybe it will take you 1 month before you convert. And maybe in that month you have come to our website twice, maybe once with your iPad, then with the smartphone of your wife. Then maybe you received a referral from a friend. Maybe you were impacted by one of our paid ads on Facebook. And it's very, very complex to understand all the path and the trajectory that at the end made you convert. And then, by the way, when you convert, you create an account, but then maybe 3 weeks pass by before you find the time to set up a standing instruction in your bank account towards our bank account to start investing. So it's a very long, a very complex path that can take many different routes. So people don't do that because they are not able to measure. I mean, not all the marketing channels are related to performance marketing. Not all the marketing channels should be looked through a dashboard of a KPI in terms of the return on equity on investment money, or the money invested into the ROI of that specific channel. What we do is also a lot based on an holistic approach. You do an omni-channel, multi-channel strategy. And then the kind of price you will collect is in terms of reduction in churn, increase in organic referral. So it is not immediately linked to a customer acquisition cost parameter.
Okay.
We do that, but for more performance-driven channel. And for the others, so which is the return of investment of, for example, Stashway Insight. Stashway Insight is a publication we do every year. We go deep, we deep dive into the data of the previous year to understand some correlation or some patterns that clearly emerge from our data point. And having thousands and thousands of investors is very powerful from a statistical perspective. Which is the return of investment of this little book of 40 plus pages. It's difficult to quantify, but then that book goes in the hand of the right journalist. We get top media coverage, free, earned media. We get features, we get interviews, we get we are even more in the top of mind of journalists when they think about wealth management. This is there is no price for it. So we do a lot of things like that for education purposes. Again, as I told you in the beginning, in order to establish trust, you need to increase education. You need to put a lot of effort into education. Video, non-video, article, short, long-form article, social media post, visual, flowchart, webinar. We have put, for example, and all the content of our webinar now have been professionally recorded in our studio. Lots of overlay graphics to explain the concept on the slides. And you can enjoy them with our app. You don't need to be a customer. You need you don't need to be to put any money with us. You simply download the app, create your account, and you can watch lots of hours of content in a little snippet of 10 minutes each on demand whenever you want. Which is the return of investment. Difficult to calculate from a CAC perspective, but powerful from a brand awareness perspective, reduction in churn, increase in share of wallet, and overall trust. You feel you can trust it. I see the CEO, I see the CIO, I see the CTO, I see the co-founder live, I see their faces, I can trust this guy. This guy are serious, this guy have experience. They are here in the market for the good, they are, it's more than 15 years plus each one of them that is doing this. I can feel them, and then I start to believe into this project. Then obviously, wonderful UX, a wonderful product experience, seamless onboarding experience, and sorry, just to mention at the end, returns. We offer. We have shared recently our returns. Obviously, you need to have a good product. No, you need to. You need to have this kind of magic mix of UX, the right education, and the right returns, and then the magic will happen, and the kind of hyper growth we are seeing will happen.
Filippo, such good points there. I loved everything you shared there around, you know, not everything has to be measured, and what you were talking about around organic referrals, customer acquisition cost. I think the problem in a lot of companies though is that everyone gets into the, or they fall into the pitfall sometimes of kind of trying to measure or put everything back on leads generated, right? And look at the customer acquisition cost and attribute an activity to a lead or to a qualified proposals out in a pipeline or something. I guess internally at Stashaway, without sharing too much, how are those conversations different? Are you kind of measuring different things, or are you kind of celebrating different wins when you've got these kind of more kind of long-term brand building activities that are going on?
So on some channels we are very we go in a very kind of deep dive into performance. Okay, so we have our performance channel that mm-hmm. we monitor closely, but overall they are part of a mixed strategy.
Okay.
In which we monitor, we tend to monitor more inputs that we put into than output, because remember we are also deeply tied to the market. Mm-hmm. So S&P 500 goes to all-time high for sure. The numbers of every wealth advisor, digital or non-digital, mm-hmm. will go up. Because people have this tendency to buy when the market is expensive, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately. Mm. And so we need to decouple what we do from the output, because the output could be influenced by exogenous factor like the market mm. performance. Yeah. Severely influenced, literally severely influenced. Yeah. Look, March 2020 versus now, it's crazy. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
But still, you don't need to feel victim of paralysis by analysis, because you have 23 different dashboards with shitload amount of KPIs everywhere, and you literally don't understand what you are really measuring. Mm-hmm. Everything is correlated with that. So you need to have the capability, and we have very, very smart people working in our strategy department. You need to have the capability to isolate those two or three things that really move the needle.
Okay.
And then focus on them. And this is a bit of a secret, if you want, a secret sauce.
Okay.
But the profile of our co-founders and some of the people we have hired are very, very aligned with this capacity to understand what really moves the needle.
Okay.
And then focus 100% on that one.
Okay.
Then you can use an OKR system. Then you can use a different managerial framework to try to align everybody in the company to that specific needle-moving KPI.
Okay. And I guess these three things, two to three things that really move the needle, do you have to, I would imagine you'd have to do a lot of kind of small-scale testing, do you, before you go all in, so that you can kind of uncover these and figure out what works for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Plus, everything is made more complex by the fact that once you start in a new country, mm-hmm. you are maybe, for example, in Singapore, we were one of the first or the first, something like that. So absolutely a pioneer. When we open in a new country,
yep.
it is not so sure that we are still this kind of pioneers in this field. Maybe mm-hmm. we are the second biggest player there, or the mm-hmm. third one.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously our dream and aspiration and objective is to become the first fast.
Okay.
But everything I said in terms of measuring the right things is even more complex, because you need to take into account the stage, the maturity stage in that specific country. So when you are the first in Singapore, you need to measure some parameters. When from Singapore you open in Malaysia, and maybe you can ride a bit of a halo effect coming from Singapore on mm-hmm. Malaysia, mm-hmm. is slightly different. But when you open in the MENA region, and we have any quarter in the Dubai DIFC area, is another world. It's completely different, because nobody will know about Singapore or Malaysia. Is another part of the world that with different parameters and different criteria.
Okay.
So again, the KPI changes again, and the way in which you approach marketing, growth, brand awareness, and brand recognition, and in general, how you want to increase your brand equity, changes again.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you open in other countries, and soon we will open in new countries, this will change again.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have opened it, then the product maturity cycle changes. So what you offer in Singapore in the beginning will change over time for Singapore. So there are many moving pieces, and it's a very dynamic, it's like an organic thing, no? That evolves and takes a life on its own. It's complex. It's complex, but obviously the price, the reward is huge.
Yeah.
As I told you in the beginning, the amount of wealth purely managed or up or sleeping under the mattress, simply sitting in cash and losing to inflation, losing to one of the biggest bull run in history after the quantitative easing 20 years ago. So not being deployed is huge in Southeast Asia. Huge. So this is the reward. If it was easy, we will not be here. So
yeah. And just going, Philippa, just going back to the thing you mentioned earlier around building trust in fintech specifically, I was interested, you mentioned that, you know, someone gives you a call, you answer the phone in 10 seconds. Is that kind of one of the big gaps or one of the things that really differentiates you, say, from the more established or kind of the traditional wealth management companies where they're much more difficult to get hold of or speak to someone, or it feels like you're just interacting with more of a kind of robotic big company?
Yes. Yes, it is. And the irony is that the industry loves to call us robo advisory, and there are no robots.
Yeah.
And you can call in 10 seconds, you speak to a human that knows how to solve your issue immediately. You are not put through a stupid press one, press two, press three, these kind of stupid things that you really lose your sleep when you need to call your bank or things like that. So yes, the efficiency and the quality of CX is of customer experience department is super important for us because we have not a branch. We are in an intangible. We are in your mind, but you don't. I mean, you have never seen our headquarters. You don't know our faces, no? Okay, we put a lot of our faces in the video.
Yeah.
But then at some point, you want to be in touch with us. You can write a WhatsApp, and we reply in a matter of hours. You can write an email, and we try to reply in the same business day. You can call us, and our record shows that, yes, in even less than 10 seconds, we pick up the phone. Monday to Sunday. It's very complex, costly to give this kind of quality assurance in terms of CX, in terms of processes that goes in the background, no? Because we don't have a chatbot, we don't have a self-service help. Yeah, you can find our FAQ, but then we will not put you through many hurdles. If you want to speak with a real human fast, you will do that in 10 seconds. And this is expensive from a managerial perspective on our side, but we believe this is the best thing to do, coupled with the best product out there and the best UX and the best security, et cetera, et cetera. So they are all pieces of a puzzle, but you cannot ignore since you are a virtual player, you cannot ignore the only moment in which your customer reaches out to you. You cannot outsource it or manage it poorly, in my opinion. And so we put a lot of effort into training our incredible CX agents into keeping them up to date with the market, in keeping them up to date with our product, and in listening to them because the customer will complain with them, will offer suggestion, and so we pay a close attention to what they do. We pay obviously very close attention to the NPS score. Every time there is a new review on the App Store, on the Google Play Store, this review gets posted to an internal Slack channel in which all the company is able to read the content of the review. So we are on top of the feedback loop in a significant way. Literally, all the company reads every review, can see the result of every NPS survey. So we put a lot of effort into this. And I think this is where we have gained the real competitive advantage against traditional banks. Apart from having what I believe is a superior product in terms of risk-based returns, and apart from offering it at a much more cost-effective rate, because we have automated lots of processes that in a bank suffer from high IT and overall legacy requirement that obviously puts a lot of hurdle to be lean and efficient, the capacity to speak with a very knowledgeable agent fast and solve your issues fast is something that is so different from the normal bank experience than when you discover this fintech player like TransferWise or now call it Wise or Revolut. I mean, the kind of customer support you get overall is super, super high. And this is why then you tend to trust them more and tend to give them even more of your money, so the share of wallet increases. And then the more the share of wallet has increased, the more will be the fee you pay to them. No? So this is a nice compounding business that needs to have lots of AUM, lots of asset under management, because then the compounding factor kicks in. Mm-hmm. And the kind of fees that you can guarantee on a recurring basis will grow bigger, bigger, and bigger. So okay. This is the business model of a digital wealth manager.
Yeah. Do you see, Filippo, that the traditional banks that are much further behind in this area in terms of this superior kind of more personalized CX, are they starting to catch up? Will they be able to catch up?
I don't want to sound arrogant, because we pay a lot of attention to our competition, because we believe a fair competition is very important for the final benefit of the customer. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult to answer in a positive way to your question.
Okay.
No, I haven't seen anything that worries me, honestly. No, unfortunately. Okay. Unfortunately, because at the end, good competitors promote healthy
innovation,
progress in the
right?
in an industry. Yeah. Mm. And but we have not, honestly, we haven't seen any good competitor.
Okay.
And the banks, no.
Yeah. What do you think it is that's really stopping the banks from overcoming this big hurdle?
Legacy.
Right.
Requirements. Mm-hmm. An ingrained mentality of doing things only in a certain way, completely stuck into IT problems, back-end issues, or they literally spin off a new startup, or they buy an existing startup, or I don't think it can come within the perimeter of a bank.
Okay.
And you have seen very traditional banks buying fintech companies a lot.
Yeah.
Lots of M&A. And then the challenge of an M&A like that is to preserve the innovative culture of the company they bought. This has to be seen.
Yeah, but then the problem is that once the company's brought into the wider bank, that then the innovative culture, or maybe the thing that made it unique, starts to maybe wear away, or the bank has an effect on that. Is it? I don't know if you see that.
Not firsthand, not in this industry, because in the tech world, the M&A you tend to know are the one done by innovative companies themselves. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. So if Google or Facebook buy somebody, you can expect maybe it's a acquire or just to hire the talent, or maybe they then are able to incorporate those talents in a way that the culture of innovation keeps growing. No?
Okay.
In a traditional industry, I no example came to my mind of neither a successful or an unsuccessful M&A. So I cannot comment on this. But the challenge is huge.
Yeah.
The challenge is huge, and it cannot come. My belief is that it cannot come from within the perimeter, the traditional perimeter of a bank.
Understand.
It needs to come from outside. Maybe it's a spin-off. Maybe it's an internal incubator. There are many banks with important corporate venture capital arm that try to innovate the bank from within, but with external ideas.
Yeah.
Maybe that is the path. I don't know. I think everybody wants to eat a slice of the pie of the very margin-rich environment that the bank have created, first of all with lending, with payment, with mortgages, so lending again, with the credit card system, points, rewards, wealth management. So everybody is trying to eat a slice of this big, big pie. And we haven't yet started talking about the decentralized finance and all this stuff that simply goes to the exponential level in terms of desire to acquire margin in these big incumbents. It will be an interesting decade ahead of us in terms of financial innovation. It will be amazing. It will be amazing, especially if we are able to transfer the money to an intangible with the crypto world. Mm-hmm. But okay, this is a topic for another podcast.
Just quickly going back as well to what you mentioned around customer experience. You mentioned that it's really ingrained, and you do a lot of training with your agents to ensure that they're offering that kind of fantastic, superior CX to your customers. Is there anything specific you look for, maybe at the recruitment stage or in terms of more soft skills, so that when you know that when you bring these people into the company, they'll be able to do that?
So for sure, mm-hmm. there is a very streamlined hiring process in which multiple people, we spend a lot of time in the hiring process. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, we are in the knowledge economy, and we mm-hmm. are hiring knowledge workers. And yeah. the only thing that matters, honestly, is the kind of people you hire at the end of the day. And we spend a lot of time. There is a very structured, highly structured process to hire people. Mm-hmm. And after we extend an offer, we are fully committed and sure we are hiring the kind of player, the top A player we have in mind.
Okay.
And then start a learning and development process, highly structured inside the company. So with multiple training path, with if somebody wants also to go through obtaining a license for himself, mm-hmm. we help him, her, with the exam, financing this training process.
Okay.
And then we also debrief a lot complex call we had with some customer complaints, because obviously it's inevitable, no, that mm-hmm. you will have complaints when you have dozens of thousands of customers. Mm-hmm. And we have also run in the past some role-playing simulation.
Okay.
Because we had some situation that required a more active approach in terms of managing a crisis. And so after the crisis ended, we ran some internal role-playing games in which right. We put everybody involved with customer, with the regulator, with journalists, across an internal round of education mm-hmm. on how he could have improved his reaction, et cetera, et cetera. And we do a lot of training. Again, they deal with a very, very, very highly charged and emotional component. So mm-hmm. people, it happened, and it will happen that people will call you screaming that they lost some of their money and they mm-hmm. don't understand why. And probably you need to explain to them that probably you were on the wrong risk profile.
Okay.
Or you were not using the right frame of mind in terms of time horizon. So even if we educate them in every possible way, if they are here for the get rich quick scheme, they are going to be deluded.
Yes.
And we need to remind them continuously to them. But then once they understand that, when they stick to a set and forget dollar cost averaging, okay, then the magic happens. They stop looking at the app very anxiously. Mm-hmm. They start to live their life and let us handle their money. And after the time of their goal, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever, they go back and they say, oh, wow, so this works. Yes, mm-hmm. this works. You just need to follow the rules. Mm. And so whenever it seems too good to be true in the world of an investment, it is. So yeah. Don't trust.
Yeah. But really worth doing all those steps and taking the time on the customer experience agents, because like you said, I mean, they're literally the ones that are at the forefront, talking to the customers, dealing with them when they've got problems or when they're frustrated. Like you mentioned earlier, money's a very kind of emotional thing. And yep. they're really kind of that key customer touch point, aren't they, almost, in terms of when they interact with the company away from the digital interaction.
Yeah, and also yeah. it's a bit of a paradox, but if during the onboarding process, you lose some customer because mm-hmm. they don't want to give you their proof of residency, for
okay.
example.
Okay.
Because who are you to ask me the proof of residency? So if they don't understand that this is an highly regulated industry, mm-hmm. exactly to guarantee them the safeness of their money and the utmost security of what they are the one handling their money, mm-hmm. it's better at some point also to lose this kind of customer that will generate only issue. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you want a committed customer base that understand the power of the compounding factor when it comes to investing, that understand right. adopting a long-term point of view. Then they go and live their life. and they forget about the Stashaway account after they have set up a standing instruction, obviously. Yep. That's the best thing ever for both of us, because their returns will be higher. We have done many simulations. The more you look at your app and you are anxious and you start to tinker with the risk profile and you start to mess around, the less will be your returns over a long enough period of time. So, and consider also that our best customer, from a customer acquisition cost perspective, from a lifetime value perspective, usually are the one referred by somebody else. So you can do everything in the world of marketing and acquisition, but at the end of the day, you are my friend. I tell you, oh, please check out this app. It's super cool. They work very well, blah, blah, blah. And you will trust much more that friend than any advertisement that I can run. So the more you are committed in the first instance, the more you will be a wonderful ambassador for us, the more you will be ready to explain to your friend, you need to wait, you need to be patient. This is not going to give you money immediately. This is whoever is promising money fast probably is a scam. And unfortunately, this is a field full of scammers. So we need to be very, very careful of the way in which we advertise, in following all the regulation from all the legislator in all the countries, because we have licensed in multiple countries, and every license requires us to be compliant in slightly different ways, but always to guarantee the highest standard for our customer. And this is important. Again, it should not be provoking, investing should not be provoking extreme emotional status in you. If it is provoking extreme anxiety or extreme happiness and greed, or you are investing too much, or you are investing at the wrong risk profile or in the wrong product.
Yeah, makes sense.
We don't believe in an active approach to investing. We strongly don't believe in it.
And goes back to what you mentioned earlier as well around the word of mouth marketing or the referrals from happy customers, in that it's another thing that's not easy or you can't attribute.
Referral are more easy to attribute from a purely last click perspective. You see the referral voucher being burned, being used. But what is behind that, you have no idea. And almost no idea. Yeah. And also, obviously, referral move together with the market. Again, so they tend to gather people, to find people, to bring in people at the peak of the market. So that cohort is going to have a bad surprise at some point, because the market obviously fluctuates in the short term.
So Filippo, you mentioned, that the company's going from strength to strength and you're growing very quickly. What are some of the things you're observing or the challenges you're facing as you grow?
if you want to call them cultural challenges, in the sense that people from different countries with time zone differences, religious differences, from an ethnicity perspective. So the cultural background is completely different, and you need to be able to work well with everybody. So that needs training, that needs high emotional intelligence, that needs the time to understand and to see the world with from the shoes of the other, no? With a pair of eyes of the other person in front of you, that with COVID is not in front of you, is on a video call or in a Slack message away. On a keyboard, in which usually the message is lost in translation. So there is a lot of work that needs to be done to align all the stakeholders, to create emotional intelligence, to bound and to connect people that are far away. And we are not Google. We are not a global company by design. We are becoming it right now. And we are designing the company now to become global. But this is in the making, and this requires a lot of trial and error. And then there is an organizational perspective that is brand new for many of us, of not thinking only about the headquarters, but thinking about the needs of every country, having a vertical execution functional lines mixed with horizontal dotted line regional lines of reporting. So this is a complex matrix. It's always a trade-off. You can read all the management books, you can go to all the MBAs of the world, but there is always a big trade-off in this. And the amount of siloed kind of communication or shared openly, it's a delicate balance. And plus, add on top of that, again, COVID, everybody working from home, no opportunity. We do virtual offsite with all the people of the company, and we have a great HR team able to handle a very complex virtual offsite. But still, it's not like going out together and having a big dinner together like in the pre-COVID era. So difficult to... We have hired literally hundreds of people without inviting them to the office in person. And that was absolutely not expected when we started the company.
Yeah.
So it's an evolving process, the scaling part. Lots and lots of emotional intelligence is required at every step, at every level of the hierarchy. And then lots of trial and error. And if you have hired well, and if you are hired in a way that is resonates well with your values, in our case, we are very humble as a company, and we're very, very democratic. We listen to other people. So if you have hired this kind of people, you will solve issue. And the issue will be inevitable. The issue will be the problem will be inevitable. Too many people in the room, so problem are there by design. But then you are able to address them.
People are still the key.
Always. Also because, I mean, we are innovating so much in this field that sometimes you are lucky, and you find the right product, and the product market fit happens magically. Sometimes you are not so lucky, but both of the times you put the same amount of effort. So you should reward. And you should acknowledge the process, because the output, I mean, maybe that day the market went super good and you believe you are a god. No, you are not. Simply the market is pushing like crazy and you are sitting on the shoulder of the market.
Yeah.
And maybe another day you have done everything good, but then there is a bad news about whatever and the market tanks. And you don't understand why, and you should not be sad. So you should try to focus on the process.
Yeah, absolutely. Filippo, I've loved talking through these three points. I think we got into a lot of depth as well around the marketing that you're doing, that long-term approach to brand and attribution as well. But yeah, I really enjoyed the points that you mentioned around trust and the ways in which you're offering this superior customer experience. It sounds fantastic. What you're able to do for your customers, and then finally just around scaling challenges, and you've got to have that emotional intelligence and make sure that you're recruiting well and in the right way so that you can kind of tackle any challenges that come up. So really, really enjoyed the conversation, Filippo. Just to close, I always ask my guests to share one life or career lesson with the listeners.
That you always met people twice, so better to treat them well always.
Absolutely, yeah. What goes around comes around, doesn't it?
Yes, always.
Yeah, you don't know where it's that you don't know where that person might be in 10 years, 20 years time.
No, but it also is a very pragmatic karma lesson.
Yeah.
Also because your reputation usually will precede you.
Yes.
In a good or bad way. So, yes. So better to be a nice human being overall.
There's a lot of talk these days, isn't there, about personal branding, about building your brand online. But if we think back to... So even if you just remove the digital element, personal branding, I guess, is what people say about you when you're not in the room.
Yeah, that's a very good definition. And
yeah.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Well, Philip, I've loved having you on Digital Transformation and Leadership. I really appreciate you coming on. And I think we've got a bit more to unpack in season three, so I'll have to have you back.
Wonderful. Thank you, Daniel. It was my pleasure.
How can people get in touch if they want to find out more?
I have a newsletter, but it is in Italian that I try to send every Friday is a free newsletter with what I found interesting in the world of technology and innovation. It's in Italian, but all the links I put there are linked to English sources. So the curatorial component is there. Maybe I can share with you the link so you can put in the footnotes.
Yes, please do. I will add it into the footnotes, into the show notes for everyone to access.
And then you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect.
Yes, nice and easy. Just take Filippo's name again from the show notes and pop it into LinkedIn.
Yeah, Filippo and Stefanelli, my last name.
Fantastic. Well, Filippo, thanks again for coming on, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Daniel.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review. Just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it, as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back again next week, when we will again go behind the scenes with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.